You're listening to Spotlight Asia, a podcast that shines a light on ideas that matter. Hello, I'm Larry Markowitz. Welcome to Episode 3 of Season 4 of Spotlight Asia, the podcast series presented by AIESIA, the International Association of Young Lawyers. Over the course of Season 4, we've been exploring the academic programs of this year's major AIESIA events. We're also discussing diversity and inclusion and human rights, as well as resilience and the digital economy. Today's episode is entitled Embracing Sustainability, Implications for Lawyers. For an association to be sustainable, it must embrace environmental, social, and economic responsibility. The association needs to weave these practices into its core operations while aiming for long-term impact. A sustainable organization must be mindful of its environmental footprint. It also needs to adopt energy-efficient technologies while promoting waste reduction. To be economically sustainable, an association must carefully manage its financial resources to ensure stability and resilience in the face of economic challenges. By embracing sustainability in its many dimensions, an association contributes not only to its own longevity, but also to the well-being of the community and the planet. In a couple of minutes, we'll be introducing our guests, Vittoria Lapomarda and Aaron Baker. But first, in a cameo appearance, we're joined by our friend Dino Serafini, co-chair of AIESIA's Sustainability Board. Dino will tell us about a special sustainability project that AIESIA will be implementing in the next couple of months. Dino, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Larry. Thank you very much for the warm welcome to this episode.
My pleasure.
Great. I'm quite excited to dive into the discussion with our incredible guest today. We can say that the transformative journey of AIESIA started from the bottom, from its base. So while the AIESIA team in Brussels has always prioritized sustainable practices, the initial steps for the young lawyers of AIESIA, its members, were taken during the unforgettable 2019 Annual Congress in Rome, the one dedicated to sustainability and the law. After that, during the pandemic, with a few fellow AIESIANs, friends basically, we expressed our concern to the Bureau of the time and highlighted the opportunities for a global organization of young lawyers to embark on a transformative journey. So as you mentioned before we started the recording, actually, the role was initially held by one person. So In 2021, I took on the role of sustainability officer. But recognizing the challenge of this journey, we then expanded the team, adding two very valuable members, Lisa Urbas from Austria and Daria Capotorto from Italy, that with me formed the AIESIA Sustainability Board. The Sustainability Board advises the AIESIA Bureau on ESG matters and is responsible for implementing the actions outlined in the AIESIA Sustainability Action Plan. It sounds all very formal, but as said, this started from the bottom, from discussions among friends and concerned stakeholders about how an association of young lawyers that travels globally can actually be sustainable.
So is the focus really on environmental, or it's on the S and the G of ESG as well, the social and governance parts?
Well, Larry, I have to say the big challenge is on the environment, but the only way we could responsibly take on this challenge was that of considering also the S aspect through G concerns, so through governance. And this is why we have now structured in the Sustainability Board. We have three members. So each of these members is entrusted with one of the pillars. Lisa manages our initial stepping stone, awareness, research and training activities. We want our members to be aware of what is sustainability and what sustainability means for lawyers. Daria focuses on environmental and social projects. First, carbon reduction, but positive impact at a larger scale. Personally, I work mainly with our partners, try to coordinate the efforts of AIESIA and the external stakeholders to create engagement and achieve goals. Vittoria and Aaron today are two elite members of such a group.
Are these the partnerships you are going to announce?
Maybe. I think we are late to consider this a spoiler. That's definitely it.
Okay. It's better that we got the word out before.
Indeed, indeed, so true. But I will leave it to their words to express what these projects are actually about, because nobody can do it better than them, if you agree. Today, what we can say for sure is that the efforts towards sustainability of Asia involve its entire reality, are really pervasive, from the Asia team to the Bureau, but all its members are fully committed to contribute to the Asia transformative journey embedded in the action plan. So our guests will shed some light on how partnership can benefit an organization like Asia, whose business model, as we mentioned, is not per se the easiest to tackle from a sustainability perspective. So I really look forward to hearing about this from them.
And thank you, Dino, for taking on this expanded role at Asia. I think you really helped set the stage for the rest of today's episode on sustainability. And now it's my pleasure to introduce two very special guests from Amsterdam. We're joined by Vittoria Lapamarda.
Hi, Larry. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure. And from London, Aaron Baker.
Hi, Larry. Great to be invited and looking forward to our conversation.
Now, Vittoria, I understand you oversee business development and B2B partnerships for the Benelux countries at Treedom, the first website in the world that allows you to plant a tree remotely and follow it online. You have a European master's in business studies with a focus on international marketing and an undergraduate degree in economics from the Università degli Studi di Bari. Excuse my Italian.
Yes, that's correct. And your Italian is perfect.
Oh, thank you.
It's during my master's degree that I realized that I was getting closer and closer to environmental related topics. In my personal life, I was trying to find new ways to be a more sustainable consumer. And then eventually I realized that my job had also to follow my values, because that's what I was going to dedicate a third of my day to. And so I decided to only work for organizations that could generate a positive impact on the environment. So I started working in companies that were benchmarking sustainable practices across various industries, and then eventually I moved towards nature-based solutions and tree planting, ending up working at Treedom.
Great, and we'll hear more about that soon. And Aaron, you're a strategic partnerships lead at Plan A, which is a corporate carbon accounting, decarbonization, and ESG reporting software provider. You have a master's degree in organizational psychiatry and psychology from King's College in London, and are accredited as an executive coach. Anything I'm missing?
No, that's quite a mouthful, Larry. But yes, thank you for that. Yeah, I just wanted to maybe give a little bit of an understanding in terms of my journey to sustainability, a little bit different to Vittoria's. I think it was more by accident than design. So again, I was working on the investment banking side. Paris Agreement occurred, and there was a larger move towards green financing in the capital markets, particularly green bonds. And I actually, my interest grew from there, actually. So it percolated from my day to day. And then I've actually thought that, you know, rather than moving money around, I was quite interested in delivering more of the outcomes or the impacts. And so helping corporates actually within that transition. So that effectively eventually led through a bit of a squiggly career through to Plan A. So again, providing some of the tools to talk the first language of sustainability, which I look at as carbon.
I was actually involved in a company that issued green bonds here in Canada. I was one of the founders of the company. It's continuing its operation. So I look forward to discussing more about that later in the episode. But let's begin with a couple of straightforward questions. We want our listeners to understand what exactly it is that your companies do. Let's start with Vittoria. Treedom allows its users to plant a tree remotely. What exactly is that all about, and why?
Treedom is a tree planting company, even though we prefer to say that we grow trees, because it's not as easy as it sounds. We are committed to planting the right tree in the right place and for the right purpose. So we really want these trees to grow and thrive in their environment. On top of that, we collaborate with smallholder farmers around the world. So we also have a very strong social component. Let's say that our trees contribute, of course, to CO2 absorption, but there is also an impact like the enrichment of biodiversity, combating soil erosion and desertifications, and then also providing education and income opportunities for these farmers. But what really makes us stand out of the crowd of the tree planting industry is the digital experience. As you said, we allow people to plant trees remotely. What does it mean? Every tree we plant is geolocated and it's photographed and has its own digital twin. What's a digital twin? We call it the tree diary. It's an online kind of a Facebook wall that each tree has on our website, where every few weeks we post an update on the project the tree belongs to. Both individuals and businesses can plant and gift trees. And we were born in 2010, so 13 years ago, where tree planting was not a thing yet. People were not aware of this. Sustainability was not a trend. And we're very proud to say that to date, we planted over 4 million trees and we involved over 240,000 farmers, thanks to all the individuals and all the companies that plant trees with us every day around the world.
And each one of those trees has like an RFID tag on it or something that tracks it?
Yeah, it's not on the tree itself, but we use a little GPS device. So when the picture is taken, the coordinates are taken automatically and everything is uploaded then on our database. And we have a public register of trees where you can see everything.
And Aaron, Plan A specializes in carbon accounting. So what exactly is that? And basically, what services do you provide?
Sure. I mean, I think it's just a nice connection to what Vittorio was mentioning in terms of making sustainability tangible. So, you know, we could go from effectively trees and digital twins. We're also asking the question which companies ask, which is, you know, what is our carbon footprint? So since IPCC standards produce global carbon budgets and effectively how companies contribute to that through various aspects, but particularly activities and use of products, the question becomes, okay, what's a corporate footprint to that? Now, that's been around for about three decades in terms of as a concept. It hasn't really accelerated to until really 2015 with the Paris Agreement. And then now there's much more move towards regulations, including the EU CSRD, where they're focusing very much on effectively what is your carbon footprint and also your decarbonization strategy. So Plan A operationalizes that into a workflow tool. It helps companies from an understanding of where their company is, what their company does, so what their industry is, what their products are, how the products are manufactured, how they're passed through down the supply chain, and then through to end of life. So that gives you a baseline in terms of what that carbon emission might be, both in absolute terms, which is how much you actually produce, and intensity terms, which generally relates to how much revenue you make, what's the carbon cost of that revenue. And then again, you might see a lot of the organizations globally now that are increasingly setting science-based targets or targets of decarbonization targets. In order to do that, you need to have a baseline and then you need to sort of set a target and then have a strategy for how you can decarbonize your operations. That might simply be via capital expenditure. It might be something as simple as, you know, switching out your fluorescent bulbs to LED lights, removing waste baskets, you know, going from business class to economy. There are a lot of various levers on the low-hanging fruit, and then there's also larger ones. Our solution allows you to go from baselining to target setting to decarbonization planning.
And do you give advice on how they could make their data improve from year to year, or you just measure it for them?
So we're predominantly a software as a solution service. We do have a climate team, which effectively helps where necessary set targets, particularly the science-based target initiative. So SBTI is a very big third-party initiative, which we do align with depending on the industry. So we do provide some advice on target setting. There is in the future a view that we could actually look to help provide decarbonization solution providers, which is where sort of Plan A is moving towards. So making decarbonization actionable. So moving away from setting a target to 2040, 2050, but actually saying, what can you do today in order to do that with a curated list of solution providers, which our climate team maintains?
Well, I think that's a useful service. I mean, it's great to say reduce your carbon footprint, but people and companies probably need some guidance. So I could see how that would be in demand coming for in the future years. Vittoria, you're familiar with AESIA. Our association operates on a global level. We have members in 100 countries. What are some key environmental sustainability considerations that an international organization such as AESIA should take into account?
So I always say that any job can be a climate job. Some people, they think that because they're not an environmental scientist and their job was not born to be connected to sustainability, there's nothing they can do. They're just out of the picture. But this is not the case. From the perspective of an international association like AESIA, I would say that you can definitely promote the integration of climate considerations into legal practices. To give you a few examples, you can encourage the selection of clients that have decarbonization goals, or you can encourage the integration of a language that is addressing climate risks in legal agreements. Or also as an association, you can be an advocate for climate-friendly policies. Overall, I think the main role that AESIA can play is to foster dialogue on climate-related integrations into legal practices.
So we're not just sitting in front of our computers as lawyers. We could actually have an effect on the physical world through these ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Now, these days, it's becoming increasingly common to see organizations of all sorts claiming to be environmentally conscious, basically for marketing purposes, but often without making any actual efforts towards sustainability. Aaron, are there specific standards or certifications that international associations or businesses even could pursue in order to prove they're not greenwashing? In other words, to demonstrate that they're genuinely committed to sustainability.
Yeah, sure, there are, Larry. I mean, there are a number of standards and certifications. So again, greenwashing, just for listeners, greenwashing is effectively a term that is used where the sustainability, let's say, outcome or impact or purpose isn't actually met, dependent on what was effectively said. So for example, if you would say something is biodegradable, a product is biodegradable, sometimes biodegradable can mean, yeah, it's biodegradable in 1,000 years versus biodegradable in 50 years. And of course, it depends on what that's being used for.
Some of that is in the fine print, I think. So.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting because, you know, I was only on the London Underground yesterday, and there was, of the 10 billboards within the train, there was 7 products which were emphasizing sustainability credentials. None of them had an asterisk or a small print other than, you know, carbon neutral was banded around quite a lot. So standards generally are either formed by regulators, industry associations, and sometimes NGOs, depending on the space. You know, just here in the UK, the Advertising Standards Authority has recently come out with a concern about these green credentials being utilized for marketing without providing evidence.
So in your subway or underground car, out of the 7 posters, how many do you think were telling the truth? Or at this point, the standards are not yet imposed, so you don't know, really.
I would say I wouldn't be with a high confidence that any of them were what I call sustainable. It's just because the devil generally tends to be in the detail. Generally, what you want to see is some type of taxonomy, a little bit like in the EU. We have an EU taxonomy, which gives performance thresholds, but it's this balancing act between being very prescriptive, which means you go away from innovation, to actually something else. So, for example, you have high-level principles. So ICMA, which is the Green Bond Standards, is the market association for Green Bond Principles. They give very high-level principles, but then it's so high level that it can leave a lot of flexibility, or you can be very specific, which is something like the EU Green Taxonomy, which actually talks about how activities are green, so the definition of sustainability. And then you, of course, have what I call very specific activities that are driven by NGOs. Equator Principles is an interesting one for that. That's for infrastructure that is being built within tropical zones. So particularly we're talking dams, emissions and this sort of thing? Does it actually affect biodiversity around it? And of course, Carbon Disclosure Project, CDP, is the original NGO sort of within this space, which effectively helps disclose carbon emissions to interested parties.
Let's bring this back to lawyers. How effective are education and awareness campaigns in motivating international lawyers to integrate sustainable practices into their professional conduct?
It's a good question. I think if you Google sustainability education right now, there is an inordinate amount of providers out there trying to provide education awareness. What we're sort of seeing in the market, in particular with clients, is that awareness is happening in people's personal lives, and you generally tend to find that there are champions within organizations that are sometimes not at the decision making or particularly that C-suite level. We're noticing a number of lawyers being very interested in sustainability. Then they might have a sustainability report from their law firm, but nothing else necessarily there. But again, I think it always starts with awareness. Unless they're aware of a problem and the problem needs resolution, then of course, you know, the conversation doesn't start in the first place.
Vittoria, the very nature of AESIA dictates that we hold global in-person events, and inevitably this leads to our members burning jet fuel for travel. Now, short of holding all our meetings by Zoom, how can an international lawyers association like AESIA continue to promote collaboration and knowledge sharing among legal professionals worldwide, while actively integrating sustainability practices such as tree planting initiatives?
So, well, I must say that I was already really impressed with all the things that Dino listed earlier in our conversation. Like you mentioned that you had a whole Congress focused just on sustainability. But I would say that, first of all, you can incorporate sustainability themes in all your events to make it part of your core values. Then you can definitely keep forging partnerships with organizations like Treedom or Plan A to reach the impact that you alone might not be able to reach. But most of all, I think it's important to create an online space where all the AESIA members can share sustainable legal practices.
So maybe that's a LinkedIn group or something like that is something that could be set up.
Anything. It can be a LinkedIn group. It can be even like a series of panel discussions that you have, any type of channel where people can share, because sometimes there are people that are very much into the topic and they go all in, and some people who are afraid, they have no clue where to start. And this is important to give them a hint, to give them some inspiration, so that at least they know in which direction they can start going.
I certainly see a role for Dino and his team that he described before. I'm sure he's listening and taking good notes. Aaron, I just joked about holding all our events by Zoom, but this really begs a serious question. In what ways can technology be leveraged to connect lawyers around the world in a sustainable manner?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I suppose the role of technology, we just need to look at all of the business news with generative AI and large language models to realize that the mega trend of technology adoption is looming large. It's also something that we've seen in sustainability. So one of those aspects is communities of practice. So, you know, I think as Vittoria mentioned, communities of practice, whether they be on LinkedIn and socializing various pieces of information. I think having digital workflow tools that enable us to work as though we're in person. So these are including digital whiteboarding tools, etc., are something that we've seen really quite useful, where previously they would require an in-person scoping session, which of course have the associated international travel. But then I'd also mention that technology is being also used for carbon accounting itself, right? So again, Vittoria was mentioning previously about using geospatial information for trees and growth rates, and we of course can see that there's geospatial data now being used for us to understand, for example, dieback in a forest for carbon credits, etc. So we can start working out whether, again, this from a decision relevant perspective, does that information mean sustainability or not? Increasingly, we're also seeing law firms, for example, there's a product that is quite common within the space called controversy risk analysis. They might call it social media listening or things like this. This is where NGOs and news sites are being tracked where sustainability issues, which can include pollution, it can include particularly governance concerns that are outside of the more well-trafficked developed markets, are actually picked up via algorithms, which are then effectively interpreted by trained analysts. And that's actually helping lawyers effectively have an early warning system for their clients to say, actually, this is a potential sustainability issue that you might not be aware of. We've just seen it in a very local news site. So now we can effectively come up with a plan of either engaging with that issue before it's actually comes in through another channel.
Well, let's move on now from the theoretical to the practical. Vittoria, could you tell us about some businesses or international groups that have successfully integrated tree planting or similar sustainability initiatives into their core activities?
Absolutely. I have the perfect example for you, actually. The company is called More Global. They're a global network of firms offering accounting, auditing, and legal services. And they have this social ambition initiative. It's a global-wide strategy where they commit to deliver positive social impact in everything they do. In the past 2 years, they've been planting trees with Treedom because they wanted to build a forest that was the physical representation of this social ambition initiative. As I said before, all the trees planted with Treedom also have a strong social impact, and that's what More Global wanted to focus on. What I like very much about this collaboration is how they have succeeded in involving many of the partner firms in this project. They have hundreds of partner firms all over the world. So first of all, they started gifting trees to their events. They also hold many events in person, just like Aisha does. And most of the attendees were part of the partner firms, and they realized how cool and green this gift was compared to a tote bag that they usually would receive in an event. To make you understand how successful the promotion was and the involvement of other partner firms was, initially they had committed to planting 1,500 trees for the first 3 years. We are in the second year of our collaboration, and thanks to the contribution of all the partner firms who decided to join, they have now planted over 5,000 trees. The goal for this year was 1,000.
Which also relates to the standards we discussed earlier about what constitutes a green bond. So I imagine that'll be standardized too. Look, we're up against the clock, but I've been enjoying this. Our tradition here is to end by asking our guests for three takeaways. So Vittoria, Aaron, what are your three takeaways from our discussion?
Oh, only three, Larry. That's quite a challenge. It's been quite a multifaceted conversation.
We're up against the clock, though. We're up against the clock.
Yeah, that's it. So sustainability, I mean, I would say, look, sustainability is multidimensional and it's complicated. It's a so-called wicked problem. There's been a number of advancements in recent years which have made sustainability operationalized, so we can actually use it as a construct now. And that's good news. What I would say, though, is that nobody owns all of the pieces of the sustainability puzzle. And through collaboration, partnerships, we're all able to push the boundaries of what is possible. No one really was doing all of this together until recently. And again, no firm owns all of those pieces. So it's exciting. We've come a long way since the Paris Agreement. And it's exciting, I think, what the next 10 years will bring.
Thanks, Aaron. And Vittoria, what are your three takeaways?
The first one is very much connected to what Aaron said. Sustainability is multidimensional, but it's also cross-functional and therefore shouldn't be seen as a separate compartment, as it often happens. And as Aaron said, partnerships are useful to push boundaries, but many pieces of that puzzle are already inside the business. I would say that people and businesses talk sustainability in different languages. People follow more their moral compass, whereas businesses, they need a push from policies and regulations. So another takeaway, in my opinion, is that Aisha can definitely play a pivotal role in shaping young lawyers to become advocates for those policies. And last, I must say that sharing and communication is paramount to keep pushing each other to do more and to do better. It's not just about ticking boxes in policies. Businesses and people also follow trends. And on top of that, they want to feel part of something. And as I said before, many of them don't know where to start. So by communicating and sharing, you inspire them and you give them extra guidelines to start with.
So certainly a role for an organization such as Aisha and its members in over 100 countries. So we could really spread the word. Look, we're out of time. Vittoria Lapomarda, Aaron Baker, thank you both for sharing your insights on sustainability and for a fascinating and informative discussion.
Likewise, a pleasure. Have a lovely day.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. This has been episode 3 of season 4 of Spotlight Asia. Today we discussed how lawyers and legal associations can embrace sustainability. As our season progresses, we'll continue to explore the programs of major AISIA events, including the 2024 Annual Congress in Madrid. We'll also speak about diversity and inclusion and human rights. You've been listening to Spotlight AISIA, a podcast produced by AISIA for young lawyers across the globe. If you like what you've heard and wish to be notified of future episodes, connect with AISIA on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Instagram. Or you can simply download Spotlight AISIA wherever you find your favorite podcasts or at AISIA.org. For all of us at l'Association Internationale des Jeunes Avocats, this is Larry Markowitz wishing you a great day.